I'm sure you've heard this before. Welcome. I hope you've been having a good time so far. I guess if not, it's too late to fix that now, but I think you'll enjoy this anyways. Can you hear me without the microphone? Okay. With the microphone, because then it's a distraction. Okay. So basically, at first, when I didn't realize how many people were coming, I thought I'd go and bring everybody some vegetable matter, pass it around, let you eat it, and then tell you all the bugs that you ate. But I realized 35 people, it wasn't in the budget. So if you want later on afterwards, you can come up. And this is highly infested with aphids. All the rabbanim, paskind, that the aphids that were found in this plant are for sure insects, and your mevatel all the mitzvos and do all the averis if you eat this. But if you come up and take a look, you'll see that it's very, very hard to see them. I'm not going to try to pass it around because it just gets too boring. By the time one person gets it, the other side forgot what I was talking about.
What does this have to do with eggs?
We'll talk about that later.
Oh, okay.
What we have here is, first of all, as Rabbi Grossman said, and I want to thank Rabbi Grossman for giving me this opportunity. I can't do this with the microphone.
There you go.
What I wanted to do just basically is eggs. A lot of people ask a lot of Shabbos about eggs, and I'm sure, Bezrat Hashem, when you get married, if you're not married yet, you'll see that eggs, there are a lot of Shilas. First of all, I don't want to give you any illusions here. My job is not to sit in chicken coops and just watch the eggs roll down the conveyor belt. There's a lot more to eggs, the cooking of eggs and stuff like that. But a small part of the job is actually identifying the eggs themselves. And I'm not going to start pulling out blood spots, because we don't have the facilities here to really teach you anything of significance if I were to take eggs and start cracking them open all over the place. But I wanted to talk, first of all, about brown eggs, especially for those people that are crazy about omega-3. You should know that a regular egg has 250 grams of omega-3 in it. So when you hear that it has 250, they put it on a lot of the labels, 250 grams of omega-3, it's no big deal, that just means it's a normal egg. But what they also do is they infuse a lot of things, and they do a lot of things to manipulate the chickens to get it higher. And they can get it probably as high as 500. It's not very impressive, but what they do to the chickens, it's very mishun, and the result is that the eggs don't look like the way they're supposed to. Just to backtrack, there was a time when producing eggs was a very simple operation. You got yourself a big room, you filled it with cages, you filled the cages with chickens, hired someone to collect the eggs and just watch the money accumulate. Nowadays, with animal rights activists and people like that, I don't know if anyone spoke about them yet, the egg situation has become much more complicated because people want to have organic, free-range eggs as if the chicken cares if it's running around the field or not. But there's a big deal to have the chickens free-range. Now, free-range has a number of serious halachic consequences, which is very much changing the way we look at eggs. First of all, if you take a chicken coop, and you go to visit any of my plants, I'm not sure how many chicken coops, there's something like 40, 50 plants, they'll let anyone in, but not even the owner is allowed to go into the chicken coop. The reason is because chickens are very, very fragile creatures. And if you walk in the wrong way, some people think if your clothing's the wrong color, there are all these theories, the chickens go crazy. And all you need is one chicken to go crazy, and they all go crazy, and then they all start laying eggs. And if they lay the eggs before they're finished, then the eggs are not going to be high enough quality that the people can sell them. For our purposes, there are other things that go wrong. When the chickens are excited, then what will happen is the eggs will get blood spots in them. I'm not going to go into the science here because I'm sure nobody cares. But the bottom line, you can look online. If you scare your chicken, there's a higher probability that it's going to have blood spots. So what happens on most eggs, you'll open you probably crack eggs. I don't know if do that, but if you eat eggs, I know you're not allowed to cook in the dorm, but if you break that rule, you make yourself eggs in the morning, you'll probably very, very rarely find a blood spot. However, if you are consistently cracking eggs every so often, you will open a carton and you might find that suddenly half the eggs have blood spots. So this is because some idiot went into the chicken coop, disturbed the chickens, they all laid the eggs early, and as a result, there was internal bleeding in the chickens. Leaving for a moment the topic of blood spots, whether or not they're mutter or usser, a lot of Torah written, you can look it up, basically don't use the egg. We don't have any fertilized eggs in America, unless you go to a farmer, and even then you have to go to a really bad farmer. You're probably not going to get an egg that has a real blood spot. So instead, the most you're going to have is a protein spot, or basal hamadoldo menachai. The latter case isn't really an improvement, but a protein spot, it's not such a big issue, but nonetheless, we don't want to have it in the eggs, and we're no hig, at least here, if you have an egg, you see there's blood in it, you don't use the egg, although really there's a lot of room to be makil. Blood spot you're not going to have because they do not have roosters anywhere near the chickens. A blood spot can only result, a real blood spot, a halachic blood spot that would usher the whole egg, according to everybody, and all the problems associated with that, could only be done if there's a rooster, and even then the egg has to also be fertilized. In the days of the Gemara, in the days of the Tanakh, they did not have chickens. Chickens came from Bavel. So we can say the days of the Mishnah, perhaps, they had chickens and they had roosters. And of course the eggs were fertilized. But the eggs were still not going to have blood spots unless it's about day 3 into the fertilization process. And in fact, you can actually postpone that. So really, it's unlikely even in the ancient times that you would find a blood spot if you knew what you were doing. And today you're not going to find any real blood spots. But one of the things that we do is we go to farms and we make sure that they have a good process for checking the eggs. They have electronic eyes. They have people who know what they're doing to make sure there's not a high incidence of eggs with blood. And in addition to that, we also go and we make sure that the people who are running the coop do so in a good and professional manner. Incidentally, we're allied with the government because the USDA also wants them to do a good job when they're checking for blood and stuff like that. Usually you should know the incidence of blood in regular eggs before they remove them. In the natural encoded chicken coop is about 1%, 2%. And in brown eggs, it might be a little bit higher, 3 to 4%. And going back a step, you also might have incidences of if the birds are really, really messed up, it's not going to go too much higher than 5% before the plant starts losing their business. So the first step with the egg is you want to look at if it has blood spots. If you have white eggs, you'll probably never see a blood spot because the 1% of blood spots, they're able to remove. And if you're using brown eggs, you might have blood spots. But what also happens in brown eggs, and I can't pass it around, so you'll have to take my word for it, is that the eggs start changing the way they look. If you raise eggs and if you take chickens and you feed them consistently the same food every single day, and it's the exact same chicken, you know, pretty much all the chickens look exactly the same, all the eggs are going to look exactly the same. This is not rocket science. I don't know if anyone here is a bio major, but take my word for it, it's not rocket science. Give it the same bird, the same food, you get the same egg. What happens with the new animal rights activists, free-range chickens, and you should know that everybody wants to have free-range chickens, is the chickens have a choice. They can eat grass, they can eat food, they can eat bugs, so the eggs don't look the same anymore. What's begun to happen is you have a lot of anomalies in the eggs. Now, we Paskin, and I'm not going to go through the sources because I know you guys have been learning all day, so I don't want to overload you with looking at the Shulchan Aruch, but if you get bored with what I'm saying, you can take a look down. In that source sheet I put together, I have to apologize. My administrative assistant, she was out yesterday, and I put it together, and I can't do this thing right, so I put the Shulchan Aruch on top should really be below, whatever. So you'll figure it out when you read it. It doesn't go in numeric order. The idea is like this. We're no hope to take eggs from anyone. Chicken eggs, because we assume that we know what a chicken egg is, and it's not worth it for the guy to lie and cheat us in chicken eggs. And the same thing happens with a lot of with geese eggs, the sheets of the Ramah, we all paskin that way. You don't need a hashgach on eggs. However, it's interesting, because even though you don't need hashgach on eggs, the reason we don't require hashgach on eggs is because we have a good tefillah, so we know what's going on in the egg industry. We know how the farms are working, we know what they're doing, we know the incidence of blood spots, we know what they're doing to correct their problems. However, if we had no tefillah on what's going on in the egg industry, you could have some very interesting problems. And I'm just going to give you one. I don't know if you can see it. If not, you can come closer afterwards and I'll show you a better example. But I have here two eggs. Can you see? I don't know if you can see in the back. They look pretty much the same, right? They're both brown eggs. This is a brown egg that came out of a regular Rhode Island red chicken. For those of you that don't know, all brown eggs in this country come out of Rhode Island red chickens. This is a egg that came out of a guinea fowl. A guinea fowl, according to Chasam Sofer, is the Tarnagosa da Agma. If you haven't reviewed Chulin lately, Samach Gimel, you'll see Tarnagosa da Agma is a bird that, to put it lightly, we don't eat. So now, these two eggs look the same. No one's nervous, because bottom line is that you don't have chicken eggs aren't being sold as guinea fowl eggs. But what's happened with the free-range chickens is that farmers have discovered that they can also raise other birds in the same pens. And it hasn't happened yet on the commercial scale. But some of the small-time farmers, what they do is they'll have the chickens in a, you know, laying the eggs. Then they'll have a high fence. And the guinea fowl can fly in and out. And the guinea fowl will eat ticks and very, very small insects that cause problems for the birds. but they also lay eggs. So you got to be a little bit careful. You have to have an idea of what a chicken egg is. So even though there are more paskins that you can eat eggs without being worried if it's from a chicken, you have to know what a chicken egg is supposed to look like.
Is the brown shell different in each one?
If you take a look, and I have a bunch of brown shells, and I'll show you afterwards, but if you take a look at the brown shells, you'll see that they're somewhat the same, somewhat different. The brown shells have more or less spots. Some of them have spots, some of them don't. The guinea fowl eggs have spots. But if you want to go by the, if you don't want to have OU eggs, if you have OU eggs, we can guarantee they're not coming from guinea fowl. But if you don't want to buy OU eggs, you want to buy regular eggs, that's not a problem. But just make sure you know what an egg is supposed to look like. To that end, one of the other jobs that I have, and this is what Rabbi Grossman mentioned earlier, is that I also go and I certify that the birds that we're dealing with are actually the birds on which we have a Mesorah. For those people that know birds, a chicken that the scientists say is a chicken is not necessarily the chicken that we in Halacha say is a chicken. And just as a example, when Marco Polo, whatever year he was going to China, when he went to China, he found what he called the Chinese chicken, the silky chicken. But we do not paskin that that's a chicken. However, the Rhode Island Red is actually a descendant of not the Chinese chicken of Marco Polo, but a chicken from Southeast Asia that was combined with a whole bunch of chickens from Europe. And we paskin that even though we're not sure of the status of the chickens, let's say from, you can look at the Darchei Tshuva, he discusses it in depth, but even though we're not sure, let's say, of the species from Southeast Asia, what their status is, we accept the cochin as the Rhode Island Red is a kosher chicken, and all of these eggs come from Rhode Island Reds. Similarly, I don't know if you remember, but about 4 years ago we had a Shiloh with Leghorn chickens. Leghorn chickens, there was a man, I don't know if you know the whole story. Running out of time? Okay, don't worry, I'll finish on time. There was a man who was, I don't want to say crazy, you decide for yourself, but he was a Rebbe in a yeshiva, and he was known because the students who misbehaved, he would give them Malkus Arboim. But that's not the end of the story. Then some kid came to him and said he wanted to become a Baal Tshuva, and his parents weren't cooperating, so this man kidnapped the child. Of course, in our country, in our civilization, when somebody's kidnapped, the Rebbe who kidnaps the child goes to jail. And so this man was promptly sent to jail. And when he came out of jail, he realized that the Leghorn chicken, 100% of white eggs in America, Israel, and Europe come from Leghorn chickens. He discovered that the Leghorn chicken is not a kosher bird. And he did a test. He would take the Leghorn chicken and he would put it on a stick. And the Leghorn chicken would stand with two toes in front and two toes in back. Now, if you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch that I quoted on top, the Shulchan Aruch is very clear that a bird that's kosher has to stand with one foot. Three toes have to face one direction, one toe has to face the other direction. And he went around to all the Rabbanim, and he created quite a big tumult, telling everybody that the Leghorn chicken is not kosher. If the Leghorn chicken would not be kosher, then we have a severe problem, because that means all the eggs in America are not kosher. And if we're talking that it's really beitzim that come from a non-kosher bird, it's not just like a chumra be'alma, it's a real serious issue, because he was saying that according to the Rambam, and the Rambam is about as makil as you get when identifying birds, this bird is a predator. If it's a dores, I don't want to get into details, but you can imagine what would be if all the eggs that we're eating aren't kosher, and what would happen to all our food. So, the way the issue was resolved, pretty simply, is the guy did a bad experiment. He took farm-raised Leghorn chickens. Little known to PETA and all the other animal rights activists, chickens are abused on the farms. And the chickens that he used, they had broken toes. And because they had broken toes, they couldn't grab anything. So they just didn't want to fall, and the only way they could sort of keep on a stick in something was to fork their toes. But if you take a regular, healthy Leghorn, or you take a baby Leghorn before it's abused to death, and you put that on a stick, it will stand properly, three toes in front, one toe in back. And many people were purchasing tons of Leghorn chickens from Murray McMurray Hatchery. They're considered the best in the country. And you take all those chickens, 100% of them, when they're fresh out of the egg, they stand properly. It's only when they're older and abused that they don't stand properly. Okay, the other issue that often comes up, and this you can look at if you have the blue book in front of you on page 42. You don't really have to read it right now. You can have something to read on the subway or however you guys are getting back. But a lot of times we have to determine which birds are kosher aside from chickens. Primarily for restaurants, sometimes other purposes as well. In Europe, they had a mesorah as to which birds are kosher and which birds aren't. We paskin, like the Ramah, and the Ramah, some people think that the Ramah is super machmir and he came out of the blue, but that's not true. The Ramah had an ancient tradition that was based on the Isser V'Heter of Yonah Grundy, famous for burning the works of the Rambam. And previously, this is probably the sheet of Rashi, and perhaps it's the sheet of the Gemara, the Talmud, that we only eat a bird if we have a mesorah. That means if we're clear and convinced that this bird was kosher, dating back to the time that people knew which birds were kosher, which ones weren't. When that time isn't so clear, the Kreti Upleti, who wrote a great parish on the Shulchan Aruch, in the back he wrote a Kuntres Pnei Nesher, where he goes through all the theories about what ducks are, and he brings down the different views as to when we forgot which birds were kosher and which ones weren't. He claims that the view of Rashi was that already in the time of the Gemara, people could not identify which birds were kosher and which ones weren't, and they had to rely on something, some kind of a mesorah. And he feels that Tosfos argues in Rashi, and he feels that the Baalei HaTalmud, they knew which birds were kosher, which ones weren't. But Tosfos has to admit that by his own times, they didn't know which birds were kosher, which ones weren't. They couldn't identify the 24 birds listed in the Torah. Although the Baalei Tosfos were mesupak on a few birds, of the 24
that are
listed in the
kosher.
Torah as not kosher. Although the Baalei Tosfos were mesupak on 24 birds listed in the Torah, they couldn't identify a few of them. They didn't know which ones were kosher, which ones weren't. Of the 24 birds that the Torah lists as not kosher, we cannot identify a single one. And even the birds that some people think we can identify, such as the Orev or the Chasida, you can see that it's a machlokas between somebody and somebody, that we're not sure. Just as an example, everyone's taught, at least I was in elementary school, the Chasida is the stork. But that matter is not clear, because although this is the view of the Rosh, the Rabbeinu Yeruchim claims that they're eating it all over the place, and Rabbeinu Yeruchim is also entitled to an opinion. And similarly, the Orev, which we identify as a crow, or something like a crow or raven, and that's based on Rashi, the Baalei Tosfos argue in Rashi, and they claim it's a hawk of some sort. So the fact is, we can't identify anything listed in the Torah's 24 forbidden birds. So since we don't know which birds are forbidden, the only way we could know if a bird is permitted is if we go backwards and we say that this bird has been eaten by the Jews pretty much forever, pretty much back since the ancient times. And tracking down the mesorah is very difficult, because first of all, we can't rely on the name of a bird. And I'll give you a simple example, a quail. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu, the best mashgiach the world ever had, no offense to the OU mashgiachim, but Moshe Rabbeinu personally certified the consumption of the slav, which everybody knows is the quail. However, if you go to the market, and you could do this experiment in Washington Heights, any of the meat markets around there, and you say, I would like quail, you're 50-50, a little bit more towards the proper side, but maybe 70-30, that you're going to get either kosher or non-kosher quail. In America, we have two species of birds, which are called quail. One is called the European quail. That's the one Moshe Rabbeinu allowed the Jews to eat in the Midbar. There's also another species of quail called the bobwhite quail. The bobwhite quail was called the quail because the settlers, when they were manifest destiny, you know, conquering the whole world, they came to the conclusion that they were the chosen people of Israel. And when they were migrating across the Great Plains, they were starving. So they said, well, God's got to help us. He's got to send us the quail, just like he sent the Jews in the desert, because they were the Jews in the desert. It's a complicated issue. But unfortunately, no quail came in great numbers, but they saw these little birds running around, so they figured that had to be the quail. And they called them quail, and these are called bobwhite quails. They're not the quail that Moshe Rabbeinu was certifying, and they're definitely, definitely not a quail that is the same species as the quail. They're not even related. I don't want to get into the Latin names, but take my word for it. These birds are, they just happen to be the same size, okay? That's the only thing they have in common. And the bottom line is that they're both called quail. So somebody tells you, trust me, quail is kosher. Yeah, they're telling you the truth, but they haven't helped you because you still don't know what a quail is. And the issue gets more complicated as you go to different birds which are more exotic. I mean, right now, we live in cities, so we don't see quail flocking up and down the streets. But if you were to live, you know, in some more suburban areas, you would, especially in Europe, you would see quail all over the place. But nowadays, if you're living in America, you don't see the European birds. So it becomes very difficult to figure out which birds were accepted as kosher. And there are many, many exotic species of birds, which I got no clue what they're referring to. But even the very common species of birds that were common in Europe, they're not so common in America, and they're certainly not found in the wild. So we have to do, a lot of times, is try to reestablish the mesorah. And we don't just reestablish the Masorah to eat it. In fact, usually they're so expensive, we very rarely eat them. Some of the restaurants, I don't know, but there's another issue. Rav Kanievsky, this is related to the insects, he wrote a sefer identifying the Chagavim. And in the beginning of his sefer, he asked the obvious question, why on earth am I writing the sefer? And he concluded, I'm paraphrasing here, that if you learn Torah, you're mekayim the mitzvah of limud haTorah. That's not the chiddush part. But he also claims that if you're learning Torah and you're learning the parts of Torah that are nogeya to identifying kosher species, you're at the same time accomplishing the additional kiyum, not only of limud haTorah, but also of lahavdu ben hatomei ben hatohor. So one of the added advantages when we try to figure out which birds are kosher for the restaurants is not only are we going to figure out which birds the restaurant can serve, but everybody else involved can not only learn Torah, but they can also, if you read that article, write all the other parts of this book. You only mekayim limud haTorah, but page 42, you're also mekayim the kiyum of lahavdu ben hatomei ben hatohor. And just to conclude, because I have, I think, 15 seconds, the way we establish a Masorah is if everybody in Europe pretty much was eating it. That doesn't mean that there can't be like one country somewhere where the bird didn't exist, but there has to be a huge portion of the continent where everybody was eating it. So, for example, the guinea fowl, the Tarnagol for the Agma, according to the Chasam Sofer, it was eaten in certain parts of Europe. It was eaten in Jerba. Somebody mentioned Jerba. They have a very strong Masorah that the guinea fowl's kosher. But there are other places where they were osirit. So the OU is not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. On the other hand, there are certain birds such as partridge, which everybody in Europe knew was kosher. It was the machal malachim. It was what the kings used to eat. So the average Joe wasn't eating it. But if you were a king, you got to eat it. So those birds everyone knew was kosher. So once we were able to establish that it was eaten throughout Europe, and we could get people to testify that the partridge that we have in our hand is the same partridge they were eating in Europe, so then we'll allow it. I want to thank you all for your time. I don't want to go over time. I think I went a minute. I apologize.
We'll take two questions if there are any questions.
Yes. So the Svardim, it depends on which Svardim. As you know, the Svardim are a huge community stretching from North Africa all the way to Iran, if you want to go that direction. And it depends on where they come from. A lot of the Svardi communities are Tofes the Ramah. The Temanim, for example, they hold by the Ramah. A lot of the North African communities firmly hold by the Ramah, which means that they will only eat a bird if there's a strong Masorah going back to the days of who knows when everybody accepted it as kosher. However, there are specific communities, such as Iran, where they do not hold strongly from the Ramah, and instead they follow the Machaber and probably more the Lashon of the Rambam, and in which case, they do not rely on a Masorah, but they follow the Mishnah, and the Mishnah clearly says if you don't know if a bird is kosher or not, you can look for physical characteristics. So it really depends on which Sephardi community. Any other questions? Yes? By the way, I'm glad that you were able to hear me. I was nervous the whole time. And, okay, yeah.
The only reason why there are OUs on some eggs because those are ones which could have come from that.
No. All eggs in America, if you know what an egg is, and you can learn real quick, just ask your mother. If you know what an egg's supposed to look like, you don't have to worry. You doesn't need an OU. I'm not trying to belittle the OU. It's very important that the OU's there because we need the money. But bottom line is that we don't... eggs are kosher. However, it's very important for us to have the OU on eggs so that we have a tefisa in what's going on in the industry. Because they're constantly changing and they're constantly doing new things. And as long as we know what's going on, we can tell you, as it stands right now, all chicken eggs in this country are from chicken and are kosher. But it might happen that in a few generations, who knows what's going to happen, and that might not be the case.